From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I tell my kids that every day, and they tend to believe me. So lucky me, lucky them. But it's true, and it's one of those things, you know, you have that. It's not so much a responsibility as a parent. Well, it definitely is your responsibility, but it's an opportunity as a parent to really let your children know what you believe. Because if your children like you and respect you and know that you have your best interest, their best interest in your mind, they're going to listen to you. And if they know you are living it, not just talking it, but you're actually walking it, which I try to do, I will, no pats on the back for sure, they will respond to that as well. And with that, we welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry.
Thank you.
I'm sure you've had the same experience.
It's very true. Kids really do. And I was thinking at the beginning when you said how lucky you are and your kids are, you really are. Because in the family, when a parent takes their responsibility seriously, insofar as aware of their responsibility, and also the biggest piece is aware of their influence.
Yeah.
Because when we show them who we are on the inside and how we live our values, and we take the opportunity, because they're looking for it, don't you think? Our kids are looking for these boxes to be checked, these blanks to be filled in. And if we don't do it, they're going to find someone else. And so that's the part of God's Heart and Hands Ministry, is understanding parenthood stands between God and children. And we are the piece in between that form them. And that was a beautiful intro. You just kind of summed it all up.
We don't need to talk anymore.
No, we don't. That was good.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah. Send your check in. We need donations. And have a good day.
No, you know, it is interesting because I've said many times, you know, if you're saying to the kids, well, you know, and we hear this a lot from people really involved in the church, that people come back to the church sometimes when they have a child and they want the child baptized. And, oh, well, yeah, First Communion, we should probably do that. And they go to the classes ahead of time. Or if they're at the Catholic school, you know, they're getting it as part of their deal. And oh, yeah, confirmation, yeah, I guess so. And then, okay, we're done. We did it. Mm-hmm. We did all the sacraments, and now we just move on until those kids get married. And then they want to get married in the church.
And then starts over again.
But
right.
If they see that mom and dad are just dropping them off for CCD or a catechism class or what anybody wants to call it on Tuesday after school or something, and then that's it. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to Mass with the kids on Sunday morning or Saturday Vigil Mass or once in a while during the week. Where are you going on Wednesday at 7 in the morning, Mom? I'm going to Mass.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And if they don't see that, if they say, well, it's Super Bowl Sunday, we're going to have a party and watch the game, you know, well, yeah, that's great, but game doesn't start till 3:30. Get out of bed and go to Mass, you know.
Right.
But if they see that, they go, well, Mom and Dad, they're not really buying this, you know. Or if they just see one parent not buying it, it's going to be a lot harder for them to take the faith in and really believe it. It's like, oh, that's just something we did when we were kids because we had to, you know. And so the example of parents, and again, it is an obligation, no question, but it also is a wonderful opportunity. If you saw a great movie or found a great restaurant, wouldn't you want to share it with your family?
Right. We do. That's true. And how many parents do we know that their children are raised and they look back, wow, I wish I had, and fill in the blank. And faith is one of the strongest ones because that's the tool, that's the context, that's the foundation as they encounter the difficulties in life. And we've noticed, you know, generation by generation, they're different difficulties and seem to be bigger with every generation. That's what holds them together. And if they didn't have it, they honestly don't have the brain wiring to turn to it. And if they've got one parent was in the faith and one was not practicing as on the same level, it's such a different picture than if both are.
Yeah.
Because what do they say? More is caught than taught. They see. They have more senses that pick up than just what you say. They watch. Do you live it? And they And we know just from studying the brain and how far we've moved ahead and understanding the human being, they learn so much from watching us, right? When you've talked about your infant daughter, when she was a baby, and she was already, I've never forgotten this story, that she was already learning at, what, 2 months of age or
oh,
3
yeah.
months of age?
Yeah.
Verbal skills, because they listen
sure
and they
are.
Watch. They watch our mouths.
One day they bust out with that first word, which doesn't mean they just learned it. It got learned over time that this means mom, that this mm-hmm. means dad, whatever, and they can now verbalize it. They've been thinking it prior. I mean, it's a gradual process, and it starts, what some people tell you, it starts in the womb in terms of,
mm-hmm.
you know,
we know that.
People will talk to the baby and the sound.
Right.
They're definitely.
Newborns turn towards the parent.
Nobody has really done studies that I'm aware of about can the fetus hear, because there's a lot of stuff surrounding uh-huh. the fetus, you know, maybe it can't hear, or the ears fully developed where they could even hear, as the brain developed to accept mm-hmm. the hearing, all those things. But certainly once a baby's born, they're hearing. And one of the first things they do is give the baby a hearing test.
Uh-huh.
I mean, right off the bat, they give the baby a hearing test mm-hmm. just to make sure that they're going to be able to pick up those cues. And if they aren't, mm-hmm. well, let's start the process that, you know, they're going to be able to communicate in another way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then here, watching a newborn, when dad will talk and the newborn turns her head towards dad. So we know that there's something going on, that there's some sort of recognition. And that kind of speaks to, in a really subtle way, of the presence of parents in a child's life, which seems kind of obvious, but then again, it's not always, judging by all the pieces that we have going on. So when parents understand they are the first commandment, after the first three about God, before we talk about human behavior, parents are the bridge in between. And not only that, but they need to be honored, which means honored because it has the most influence in all of humanity. You know, you can mold people, mold neighborhoods, mold civilizations based on what the parents do in the quietness of the home and how they take their role. It's not a matter, and I find it so interesting, having been an engineer and been in industry, women that worked full time and they were in professional world, but that served their motherhood, their parenthood. Mm-hmm. And then others that were home full time and parenthood was second priority, if you will. The kids know it. You could see the shape in the family.
Yeah.
You could see it, and it's a subtle thing. And so kids know that, and it forms them and moves forward. And so the reason to bring this up now is heading into Holy Week is that ultimately what parents really want, simply put, on Ash Wednesday, they wanted their family to be holier
yeah.
than when we started. And we tend to think, oh, I didn't, you know, I look back on Ash Wednesday and I had all these great intents for the family and, you know, it did it for a little bit and then hasn't done it. But I would offer that when you have that picture and you can put it into words, you want your family at Easter to be different than they were 40 days before. When we started on Ash Wednesday, there's always time, today, the moment, and how to do that in the midst of everything else. Families have always been busy. It's yeah, true, you know, we have a different kind of busyness now. But you go back to the farm families. Man, everybody was out working.
Well, I have to think that people were even busier in previous generations because a lot of their busyness was related to basic survival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mm-hmm. pioneers coming across the prairie. Every minute was about survival.
Mm-hmm. You know, everything was focused on that.
And we didn't, you know, there wasn't a 7-Eleven on every corner mm-hmm. if you got hungry, or a grocery store, or communications. Just to communicate with somebody across town, you know, took a while.
Right, right.
You know, now you can communicate with somebody in Thailand, you know,
right.
Instantly.
Right. Yes.
You know, it's just, uh-huh. it's, we have so many more things that make our lives less busy, mm-hmm. but also could make them more busy if we let them dominate us.
Mm-hmm. And through all of that, whatever the fabric of society looks like, parenthood is at the center.
Absolutely.
And God is at the center of that. And while it seems like, oh yeah, we all know that, It's being given extra tasks right now, and it's being diluted and saying, oh, you can farm it out, the kids can do this, and You can give them a cell phone so they can organize their whole time. Or the popular one now is they'll figure it out. They can figure it out on their own. Really? How's a 14-year-old going to know decisions to make based on childhood experiences? They don't have the experiences to make those decisions. They have to have our input, the generational input that our parents gave us. Yep. I need to tell you about this as you enter into it, whether it's a job interview, you're going off to college, you're dating the first time, right, or you're thinking about studying something.
Yeah, and you know, there has not been yet all the changes in human nature, technology, not human nature, but humanity, technology, everything else. Every child still has a mom and a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
That's not going to change, is it?
They've never figured out a way to have a child without two parents.
Right.
One male, one female. There's no way. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anybody's working to have that happen, but if they are, they're going to fail.
Right. And with that, we know that as God designed it, he expects a lot of parents. And I think there's so much to be unpacked with the first commandment after he talks about God and talks about all the other details of things we should and shouldn't do, basically shouldn't do, is parents, is just stating. It's not a thou shalt. It's honor. And so that creates it tells us the influence of parenthood. And so as we move forward in the remaining days of Lent, today, just work on today. Let it be, and it's not even too much. I think we've overburdened families by all the to-dos, to-do items and things you should do and how you should do it, and all the parenting books and magazines and guides and so on. If God's in the center, and you keep going back to that, the rest falls out, wouldn't you say? It kind of becomes, oh, if we've got God in the center, then that's where we're guided to do what is it God would want us to do, and then he'll help us, right? How would everything you need, every problem, every situation, he's already anticipated, right? What do they say? He's already been there.
He's already been there. And you know, God is, I won't speak to what God is, but it seems like God is timeless, and he's all generations. It's not like, well, yeah, but all that stuff in the Bible, that was way back when. And it's really interesting. There's not one, if you look at all the words that Jesus spoke, there's not a single one of them where you could say, well, that doesn't really work today. I mean, that was okay back then. That makes sense. He's saying that makes sense.
And it made sense then, too.
It made sense then.
Right.
Yeah. And there are so many things that are, Even in my lifetime, there were things that I was learning in college as fact that have now been contradicted by, especially in the cosmos. You know, I mean,
Do you remember any of them?
They had no idea how many stars there were, how many planets there were, how many. It's like, well, no, this solar system's unique. There's probably no planets anywhere else in the.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And now everything, I mean, it's like they every day they discover something new. We found out that the moon is actually made out of Roquefort, not
not blue cheese.
Not Swiss cheese,
right,
or blue cheese.
We're discovering,
you know,
new species, right? We're still on the planet.
Exactly. Right? And it isn't that we've expanded the knowledge. We've actually in many cases contradicted what was truly believed. I mean, people weren't pulling the wool over eyes. That's what they—that's what they believed, you
right.
know.
And for the information they had at the time.
I mean, scientists, not just, you know, oh, I think there's a moon god and a sun god and all that kind of thing. But actual scientists, and it's just amazing. And it's the same thing with medicine. We see all kinds of things that they used to believe would help. I mean, not back in the dark ages, but. And now it's like, well, we're learning that actually that's not good for you. This is good for you. And all those things. But God's been there through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about Holy Week and Ash Wednesday, I was so pleased to see masses, well, not necessarily even masses. Some of them were just you know, liturgy, and you know, it wasn't a full mass. Just overflowing on Ash Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. And not a holy day of obligation.
Right.
You think, oh, that many people in mass probably was a holy day. But it wasn't a holy day. I mean, it is. It was a holy day.
It was beautiful. We saw it too. But, I saw it in my parish as well.
And the bishop going to the steps of the state capitol. To me, that is the perfect example of what the founders presumably had in mind in this country. The sort of no one religion being an official state religion, like you must all believe this, but fostering the free exercise of religion. Mm-hmm. And here's, because some people will argue that, well, if you allow religious ceremony on public grounds, that's forbidden. You know, it's a strict separation. There's a strict wall. When in fact, if you could only have religious observance on private ground, you'd have to be a property owner to.
Oh, interesting. Where would it be?
Where can I go? Here's the bishop on the steps of the state capitol.
Right.
Distributing the ashes, having a religious ceremony. It's not interfering with any function of government,
right?
But it's public ground, and that's where if somebody has a grievance, they come to the public ground.
Right.
If somebody wants to celebrate something, come to the public ground.
And the state was not endorsing it. It was not forced on anyone.
Yeah.
Right, and that is the balance of it all.
And you do, you know, I mean, you run into these weird situations where somebody says, well, I want to have this something really objectionable on public ground. And you just kind of have to look the other way and say, okay, well, that's
right.
That's life, because that's the sort of the price you pay for free speech or freedom of religion. But that way it fosters religious observance.
Mm-hmm.
It fosters religious freedom. Mm-hmm. And that to me should be the role of government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point. And so much of that I can see goes back to in the family. And imagine there's been many times around the dinner table where you've explained that to your kids and you've given them that perspective, because they come in with a view and thinking, you know, because they wonder, they think. And so they bring it home. They want to talk to you, and you offer that. And that's so important, crucial, really, to them developing, moving forward. Not only that we share our knowledge, but even if you don't have the background that you do to share all of that perspective, we have the background to support them in figuring it out, to offer what we can, but to offer the approach and the attitude. Who can I find that can help you understand more of that? Because my knowledge and experience is limited, or I don't agree, and how to have a healthy debate and modeling that for them. And so that comes back to that piece of family life, of family dinner, which we know has been so interrupted by everything else outside. And then just that simplicity of restoring the family to the patterns that have shown over time that are time-tested.
Yeah.
Right? And parents are something that have always been there. What you were saying earlier, it takes a mom and a dad. And then the routine of families, it's stood the test of time. Family dinner, community, faith, and structure, and dependability, and certainty. The human being needs it. We know that children raised in a veritable war zone or literal war zone have a different wiring, a different outcome. I won't say outcome, that's not right. A different experience that they grow in versus a family that is rarely sees somebody, that's very remote physically. That's a different, or one that's raised in the city, and so on. So we have to give attention to all of that, coming back to God, bringing it to going to God and allowing and bringing that structure back in of how God designed it. Because how important were meals in Jesus's time?
Yeah.
They were crucial to the family, right? The Last Supper. Everything was, there was so much around meals.
One of the most beautiful expressions in our language and in the world is breaking bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and where's that come from?
Yeah. Right. Right.
The Last Supper, for sure.
Right.
You know, so, it's like a universally accepted thing. Let's break bread. Like, we're brothers, we're sisters, we're fellows in this. And breaking bread, it was it It involves sharing. It involves, but it's bread. It's food. It's nourishment. It's
it's simple. It's very simple,
and everyone and profound. You know, and probably if everybody in the world, you say, okay, we're going to eliminate all food except one thing. You get to pick that thing. Right after ice cream, it'd be bread.
Yes, it would, because in different cultures, it's different things, right?
Yeah.
There's non-bread, there's tortillas, sourdough, you know, on and on it goes. And so, and look at the disruptions that we've talked about before, we're seeing in society of adult children canceling parents or different political views. What's the biggest disruption? Thanksgiving dinner, holiday dinners, the sharing, the celebration of the holiday meal.
Right.
The grief that has come with that. And we have to, one thing that the TV show, and there's a lot of debate over it, The Chosen, but there's pieces to it that we can learn that, yes, I can understand a little more of the culture because they're making a good attempt to portray the life of the world at that time and the life of the apostles. Is now I can understand, I see it, and the apostles didn't always get along. You know, Matthew was not well liked, and I see it in the scripture, but now I'm seeing the look on the face and the, you know, the eye rolls and the scoff in them. And they had to come together around a meal, right?
Yep.
And so using that as our model is using, if you just structured parent or a family life after the Gospels, you'd have everything, right? And Jesus was at the center of it, but they all came together in the different likes and difficulties, and they hammered it out. They hashed it out. And so when we look to Scripture, because that's kind of like the book that stood the test of time, right? The only book that stood the test of time.
Stood the test of time, yeah.
Right? And Ephesians 6:18, with all prayer and supplication, pray at every opportunity in the Spirit. Pray at every opportunity. So as families move through the remaining days of Lent, where are those opportunities to pray? There's no to-do list. I can give you ideas. But what works in your family? Is it when you all sit down, those few seconds that you're having juice and cereal in the morning, or when you get in the car before you pull out of the driveway? Or is it at a stoplight? Or is it in your car line together? And so looking for those pauses in your day and bringing God back into the moment, you know, in car line. And the parent saying a prayer out loud, Lord, bless my children as they go about their day. Or let's say an Our Father if it's a long line. Or a Glory Be if it's a short line. But basically bringing God back into it so the children have that. They hear it. And that they move throughout their day. Because understanding when the child gets out of the car, they're facing 6 hours, 7 hours without you being there.
Right.
So we want them to have that. God's got you. He is always there. When you start your test, pray to him.
Yep.
You know? And it seems obvious, but then again, it's not. It's kind of drawing us back to it. And where the phones have come in, how often we see someone in car line, there's, you know, the parent, which I totally get, been there, looking at their phone, checking texts. Wow, how hard it is to believe. Just going for a walk around the block. When my daughter was visiting for a bit, because she's moved out, obviously. and what? You're not taking your phone? It's 7 minutes around the block. If I'm not back in 8, you'll know where to find me. This is just unfathomable. You have to have your phone. We have neighbors. You don't know them all. I can knock on a door. Humanity will take care of it. It's going to be okay. There's such a different awareness. But to speak to it, God's got this. I'm using my faith to walk around the block for 7 minutes and have it be okay. Just speaking to that in the moment was so conflicted with everything. You have to have your phone in order to be safe.
Now, it is amazing how I will be telling my kids stories about, oh well, when I was in college or when I was in this, and then I texted that guy and I'm going, no, I didn't text him. I sent him an email. No, I didn't.
What did you do?
You know,
right? The pigeon with the
or when I remember. When I was in Ireland 40-some years ago, and, oh, yeah, I remember phoning home to – no, I didn't. I didn't have a phone. Uh-huh. I mean, maybe once found a payphone,
uh-huh,
you know, and made a very expensive phone call, just say, hey, we're here, we're fine.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be home a week from Tuesday. Here's the flight number or something, you know.
Right.
But – and you think, that seems almost impossible. And, in the summer, especially when I was a little kid, we're out playing hide and go seek and all those things. I don't think anybody actually played kick the can. I mean, you hear about that, but right. I'm not aware of that. Mm-hmm. But hide and go seek, we really did, and mm-hmm. we couldn't wait till it got dark because then it was you could hide better.
Yes, yes. You know,
and it was a small town, and it was all confined to the neighborhood. But there's no way our parents could get a hold of us other than join the game.
Right. <You know? laughs> Right, right.
And we didn't have all this technology, which now it's like, I mean, it's sometimes scary. You know, you text somebody and there's not an answer. Oh, my gosh.
I know what's wrong.
Something's wrong. Something's
Three,
wrong.
3, 4, 5 minutes. They haven't responded.
Yeah.
And they say, well, I don't check my phone during the day. I check it at night. Yeah. Really?
Or my phone was off or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't by my phone.
Or it was dead.
Right, right. And it's so we as parents, we're kind of doing what the church is doing, commenting on the world to help society navigate it. We comment on society to help our children navigate it. You're okay without a phone. You've got neighbors. You're going to be. Because they're like, well, what don't I have to have a phone? And I'm 10. No, because the school takes care of you, and then I'm there to pick you up, or da da da, so on and so forth. And we prepare them. For them to be independent, recognizing that phone's not even going to keep you safe. That's in these circumstances. What are you afraid of? And then talking to them and preparing them. And then Ephesians 6:14, finally, draw your strength from the Lord and from his mighty power. That speaks to draw your strength from the Lord. Your strength, your safety comes from him. We do our part, and we have to trust after that. And so we'll do, there's nothing I can do to eliminate every possible danger as a parent, but I can do everything within my power, and I can only give you the freedom that you can handle. You know, we don't let four-year-olds go blocks away to play, but teenagers to walk to their friend's house, so on and so forth, all of those pieces, we as parents help them learn to be independent so that they can move forward. Well, I'm too scared to go to college. You know, what if? And they fill in the blank. Oh, wow. Let's help this. I remember my daughter was about 7, as a matter of fact, 7 or 8, and she wanted to walk to a friend's house, and it was it was 2 blocks away, but the hypotenuse of it, cutting through, was mm-hmm. a park. Well, I mean, it was in the middle of the day, and I could go up on a second-story window, and that mom could go do the same thing, and we could actually watch the kids the entire mm-hmm. time. But the kids didn't know it.
Right.
But they needed that independence. They were, I'm ready to do this. And so we found a way. Well, they didn't know, and we were on the phone the whole time. To make sure, because we're thinking all the things that are obvious, but we're not going to fill their brains with, well, there could be hide and go seek, there could be somebody behind the tree, you know, and yes, that could happen, but we did everything safety-wise so that they can feel confident 15 years later to move out, to go to college on their own. And so we as parents have to draw our strength from the Lord. Lord, I'm really scared right now. I'm really worried. Show me anything I'm not seeing. And then in Colossians 4:2, persevere in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. Well, this is a tough moment, but I'm going to be thankful for it because I know you're there and you're going to protect us and guide us and help us to hear your voice if this is not the right thing, and how to do that. And so parenthood is, I would offer, the most complex, hardest job on the planet. I mean, we hear about everything in the media, the world leaders, but they had a mom and dad that had to foster them and their abilities, because leaders show up in kindergarten. You can tell the leader
You wonder, you know, you go back in history and you can even point to things in modern times. Some of these people who did really awful things in the world. And you mm-hmm. wonder, we were talking about it last night in our family, that guy or that woman was a little boy or a little girl.
Yeah.
You know, were they cute? Did they speak their first word and everybody cheered? Did they take their first step and everybody was, oh, that's so sweet? Wow. And how did they become this horrible dictator that killed people and all
these
things?
Did the kids, because kids often have a different view than we do. Did they have any
introspection? No, I mean, because you begin to think, man, they must have had an incredibly bad childhood or something. To go that far off the rails. I mean, you know, I mean, the first name that came to mind was Hitler. You know, like how did Hitler become Hitler?
Yeah.
You know, how did, and you can stop right there.
Right.
You know, because he was once in the womb.
Right.
He was once a newborn.
And
he
we know people that go through that have very severe circumstances.
Yeah.
That are, and they don't do any of that.
Yeah, and we don't know.
We don't know.
You know, did somebody, everything was fine, and then they went to college, and they did all these things, and then they went off in this direction? Or was it as a result of having horrible parents and horrible childhood and horrible upbringing, and you're just mad at the world and just don't have any sense of, you hear that, mass murderers and things that they don't have any empathy. The person's begging for their life. I have a family. Some random person that they have decided they're going to do mayhem to. They don't have, and how did that happen? You know?
And is it actually understandable now that we know that Satan exists? I mean, that we really have to give that's a piece, and we don't understand why it can affect one person and not the piece of evil. We don't.
Yeah.
And we don't. But then how do we help the children put that into place and to put that into this is part of humanity. And so as when your kids are young and you have a kid in the community on the team or in the classroom, that's stepping outside of the bounds of respect and appropriate behavior. And so many parents grab their kid and run. And I'm not letting you be around them because they don't fit the perfect child, basically. Right. But they're ignoring the fact that they have a responsibility as a community. And there's an old African proverb that a cast out child will burn the village in order to feel its warmth.
Oh, wow.
And so but where's the balance? We parents have to, you know, okay, so if I let you be around that kid but I'm involved directly or indirectly, because I encountered the same thing with my kids. I took a more present yet peripheral role. I wasn't very far off. I was listening. I was watching, because this kid needs, you know, he's attracted to something he doesn't have. So he's attracted to she is attracted to the structure of our family. And so I will allow that. And how are you doing with it? Are you picking up the behavior, or are you holding your own? Or is it a kind of back and forth, a kind of waiver? So I'm going to help you. Is this an opportunity for me to help you learn how to be around this and hold your own morals and stay connected to God? Because you're going to face this later. I won't be able to do this for you when you're in college.
Well, and you know, the good book says that, I mean, as much as I'd like to think that my kids, they're going to grow up and we're still all going to be together, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, you might live close to each other, you might whatever, but the good book says they're going to grow up and they're going to go off and they're going to form their own families, because if they don't, everything dies out, you know, the generation, you're not mom and dad forever, you're going to go on. And then they're going to be mom and dad, and then they're going to be grandma and grandpa if everything goes well. And then their kids are going to become mom and dad. And that's, even the good book says that's it's right there in the Bible, you know. And so we are preparing them for going out, but we're also preparing them in the moment, you know, because tomorrow's not promised, you know. And everything isn't just about how will this affect them in the future. It's how will it affect them right now. And I try to remember the times when I was going off the rails as a kid. What did my parents do, and what was helpful and what wasn't helpful? What drove me further away, or what brought me back? I mean, anytime you can use the word discipline or correction or whatever. Anytime you face that as a kid, your initial response is resentment. Usually you don't say, well, I really deserve it. And, you know, I'm just going to take it. And, or what worked and what didn't work. Mm-hmm. And because your parents are going to make mistakes.
So can I ask you, when you say, when you look back and you see what your parents did that didn't work and that did, I would offer, and we've lost this in society right now, is that what didn't work or what you stayed away from, that was still their best,
yeah.
right? That we know, that's a sign of maturity. Yeah. We realize, ooh, even at what looked the worst to me was actually all they had.
Oh, yeah.
It was all they had.
I mean, I look back with absolute certainty that I and my siblings there were five of us, were the most important things in my parents' life. Mm-hmm. That I have complete confidence that that's how they looked at the world, mm-hmm. which is the way I feel about my kids mm-hmm. and my wife. You know, it's and what we do with our kids and how we try to teach them. And I think them having that knowledge, you can say, well, that gives them a free rein to do whatever they want to. No, it doesn't. It means they respect your opinion more because you know this is more important. They know that their life is much more important to me than my job
yes.
or my hobbies or whatever.
Right. You and know, many times they don't see it in the moment, but they look back and you realize the sacrifices and the choices.
Yeah. And so then they respect that. Okay. I don't know how many times I've told my kids, hey, when there are bad things happen in your life, whether it's a bad grade or
not
a relationship
team,
making the
right.
team. Yeah.
Or striking out.
That we, I know you don't, not supposed to be friends with your kids, but you know, we would be your best friend. We would
right.
be your best friend in a way that nobody in your class, nobody, and having
yes.
best friends is a good
thing.
We may
not be happy with it, but we're not leaving you.
Yeah.
We're here through
yeah,
thick
we,
and thin.
The,
yes.
we care more about you than the next door neighbors or, you
right.
know, and so our advice to you or our discipline to you or whatever it is completely in your best interest.
Right. And that's what you just said brings back when my teenage son got to take his dad's IROC Z28 out, and then we got a phone call that he had put it in a field, a muddy field. And but he had made a phone call to someone else in our community because he was scared to death as a teenager. He didn't want to disappoint us. And the first thing she said is, you need to call your parents, and which was that part of, you know, and I appreciate that. And he had made a mistake. You know, he gunned it too fast. And I don't think he should have been in the car to begin with, but they didn't ask my opinion when his dad let him drive the car. But that's part of what we do is, okay, we're going to pick this out of it. We're going to help you out of this mess. We're going to let you pay for the tow truck that had to get you out. And we're going to pray right now that it doesn't get any bigger. And because we didn't know what would happen, and it didn't, and everything and worked out, but we helped him navigate. We had to make it safe. We had to be his best friend, so to speak, to help him navigate a bad decision in a moment. Because it was a momentary, because we know at that age, teenagers don't have a lot of a logical thought. It's impulse. Well, that must be the thing to do. They don't even think two steps ahead. And so then in 1 Peter chapter 2:2-3, it says, like newborn infants, long for pure spiritual milk so that through it you may grow into salvation. For you have tasted that the Lord is good. That comes from parents. You've tasted the Lord is good because I've shown you. I've turned to the Lord and I've made it part of your life when you make mistakes. And so plus as parents, we catch on to that there's something amiss and we figure it out. And when we speak to it, you can see the child go, oh, now you know about whatever catastrophe has just completely collapsed their life. And then we help them navigate through it. So when we take our role as mom and dad to be what God designed it to be, we are godlike, I would say, in their lives because of the influence we have. But we also have to be godlike in our behavior, which is he wants us to come back to him, right? There's always reconciliation. There's always growth. And so moving through Lent and the difficulties, we have to like pay attention to, okay, how much tolerance do I have to move through this? Can I just make it go away? Am I irritable with the kid? Da, da, da. Oh, wait, no, I'm at too high a fever pitch all the time. Our lives are too absorbed. What? Because everybody's capacity is different.
Right.
I know one family could only handle one kid having one thing going on outside of school. Another family with five kids, each one of them could have one. And they navigated it. and the family was in balance and they had God in the center and so on. So it's the awareness. It's of God, show me, in Matthew chapter 6, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Seek first.
Mm-hmm.
God is this, and develop that relationship. What is it? You know what these children's future is going to be. Help. I'm turning to you for the life that should be created for them. I know families that could do sports year-round, but for those kids' future, that's exactly what played out, because in college, they were, one of them was semi-pro and so on and so forth. Mine were not. Their path was very different, but he's a builder that's now doing very well in industry because he needed to be home building as a child. He didn't do well on a field. It just didn't fit for him. But then understanding the pieces, now we see it all. And in Jeremiah 1:18, for I am the one who today makes you a fortified city, a pillar of iron, a wall of bronze against the whole land. I am the one. God is the one. So as parenthood becomes, I don't want to say dissolved, but diluted, distracted, and how would you say it? So much is coming over the wall to come into the families, that God is the one who strengthens the family, who protects it, but we have to turn to them. When we bring him in, we are the ones that stand between God and the children, just like in the commandments, right? And so while it seems simple, it's actually challenging because we're so used to, we're in such a state of busyness. I'm not quite sure the right word, but every parent has had that. Like you said, every generation's been busy. So how to do it thoroughly, yet has to be seamless in the family, because catastrophe will change a family really quickly.
Yep.
But how to do it seamlessly, meaning how do we integrate it now? Because then we can make a more permanent change. Then we can shift things back.
Yeah, and you know that when you go back to even before you had a family, when you're meeting your spouse or your potential spouse, and I know we have wonderful, you know, marriage prep and that kind of thing, and some people say, oh, I don't want to go through marriage prep, or I don't need that. I'm an adult.
Right.
Anyway. And it's really good, because I don't know how many times I've heard or even experienced, you know, with a friend telling you or something, and they're getting divorced or they're getting separated. Well, I wanted to have kids and he didn't, or vice versa, you know, and you're like, did you talk about that sort of thing before you got married? Well, not really, you know, and you're like, and that seems to be one of the big ones, mm-hmm. you know, and even couples who stay together, it's like one of them's unhappy about that. You know, well, yeah, now we've got a really nice house and we both got great jobs, but I see somebody pushing that stroller you know, and it's not always that way. There mm-hmm. are couples that don't have children and they're just fine without it, and there are couples who can't have children. Mm-hmm. But that, on something as basic as that, the one wanted it and one just really didn't want it, it's a huge separation, and you think, Why didn't we talk about that?
Right.
Why didn't we go to marriage prep? You know.
Right. Right. Interesting.
Because that's a big one. Or just, you know, after we're married, I found out he likes to go duck hunting every Saturday morning. And, you know what I mean? Like, well, you didn't talk or me. Likes to watch football on Saturday. Right. I'm a college football guy. Doesn't interfere with mass.
Right.
But you know, I remember telling Shelley when we met, I said, I got to tell you, on Saturdays in the fall, I really like to watch college football on TV.
Uh-huh.
You know, don't plan wine tasting in the Napa Valley on a Saturday. You know, and that's, you know, and that's just, you know, just kind of being honest, you know.
So what do you attribute that to? Because that was natural then, but it's not natural now.
Yeah.
It's not natural to come out with those things and then find out later. Wait, what? I said I do, and you really meant you didn't want to?
Yeah.
You know, that's, Well,
I think there's unfortunately a lot of that in courtship is you're putting your best foot forward. You're mm-hmm. trying to be very agreeable, you know. Oh, yeah, let's go to that art gallery on Saturday.
Yeah, and you're gritting your teeth, like, going, what's it?
Why am I at this
you're
art gallery?
You're looking at your phone. What's the score? But you know what's interesting is living long enough and observing more, I've noticed that people that this is one of the just by observation, besides all the moral piece of it, is that people that live together without deciding to get married, that's where they roll into it. Because when you're deciding to get married, in your mind, it's in the construct of, well, all the things, the checklist. But when you just start living together, as I heard from one couple, well, we've been dating long enough, so it's time to live together. How do you know? And why aren't you getting married? And because of but there's a mindset that goes along with getting married. And if they live together, they just kind of roll into it.
Well, and from, you know, I've actually talked to my kids about this, although we haven't faced that, but the notion of beyond all the moral considerations
everything else,
you know, it's like, well, you hear this a lot. Well, we're living together because we're not sure we want to get married and all that.
Right.
So we're still just sort of in the courtship stage, but we're going to live together. So when somebody decides, like if you're just dating somebody, just from a practical standpoint, and they live at their place and you live at your place, you know, and you go out on dates, et cetera. And then one day it doesn't work for one person or another, not for any bad reason. It just doesn't work. You know, you weren't compatible to keep moving on. That it just kind of ends.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're living together when that happens, now it's like somebody's got to find a new place to live. Somebody's got to, you know, and so you just kind of keep going on because, well, how am I, what, I've got to go to work in the morning. I can't just up and find a new place and move all my stuff out
move?
And who's
going to
move and
right.
and all that. It's like to end a relationship that isn't working, you're disrupting everything else. Whereas if you were just dating, you know, just from a practical standpoint, it's craziness.
Right. Yes,
but
it is.
And from you know, then all the other much more important stuff is just like, that's just not the way God intended it to be.
Because of all those things, God intended it, you know, for many reasons, but for all of those reasons. And that's where he designed the structure of the family for the elders in the family to say, honey, grandma or great grandma to say, you don't want to do that because of these reasons.
It's always grandma that.
Right.
I know when my mom was alive, she it was because of her presence. It was because of her love. She had this respect. I mean, she was a doting grandma too. I mean, she would spoil them. She didn't have a lot of means to spoil them other than with her love. But they loved to go to grandma's house. My dad had already passed away. When she spoke up and said something and made a course correction with them, boy, did they listen.
Right. And that's one of the things about modern day families, either by extended family, we've moved away from extended family, or with this move about if you don't agree with whatever I'm saying, I cancel you and I cut that off. That's nefarious. That's cutting off a very important part that God created, because everything grandma was doing, she was backing you up. She had a bigger picture of vision and a bigger picture and vision that God had given her. So she's being God's heart and hands in those moments to provide that course correction.
Yeah.
And it comes from immediacy of being in their lives, living close by. And then it also comes from being in the family. And being part of the family and being able to do that course correction. And because children quickly look over their parents' shoulders, so to speak, for what's the world saying? What is society saying? And that's where I was telling a group of teachers just recently, I don't think you guys realize how crucial you are in family life, because you are the first circle outside of family that children are exposed to. And as they get older, they're with you more hours during the day than they are with mom and dad.
Yeah.
And so I just want to tell you, you see the good in that child, you promote them, you hold space for them, so to speak, and see the goodness in them even when they make mistakes. That's huge, because you're the first ring outside of the family. And so grandparents really hold that longevity. There's wisdom that comes with longevity of seeing these things. And like we were talking about with with getting married or living together. That's where grandma's going to say all the things that we expect. And then also, honey, when things get tough, it's the marriage, that it's the covenant, the recognition you gave that you want to be with this person for life that carries you through the thin times, the boredom, the difficulty, the whatever, all the lesser sparkle kind of emotions. And you need to have that to rely on. And that's, and God designed it. I heard one grandma say this. God designed those, the structure of the commandments for us to be happy, truly happy, joyful, happy, spiritually happy, not just entertained in the moment, but for what was best for us.
Yeah.
And so by honoring the parents, turning to them, I was praying a rosary after Mass just this week. We do it during the weekday Mass, and they were setting up for a funeral, and the woman that had passed was in her mid-90s. Well, there's her sons, her baby boys coming in. They're in their mid-70s. Wow, to see that longevity. And just going back to how the importance of what parents can be, I was speaking with a woman at church who's in her early 90s. She told me she just retired from her career as a seamstress 80 years. Because her culture back in Germany, you started yep. taking on a trade in your early teens. And she wanted to be a florist to create things that were beautiful. And her mother said, no, you can't sustain financially with that. You're going to be a seamstress. You're going to go apprentice with the tailor. And an 80-year career.
Wow.
Wow. And so that's the gift that God, how God designed it. That's where one generation feeds, fuels, and protects. And so in Romans 10:17, thus faith comes from what is heard, and what is heard comes through the word of Christ. So children, their faith comes from what they hear, our voice, and what we hear comes from the word of Christ. Now, granted, they should hear from the word of Christ as well. It's just so good for them to hear us or see us talking about scripture. But it's kind of the leapfrog from lily pad to lily pad. Parents,
yep.
faith, what is heard comes from scripture.
And why would one of the Ten Commandments be honor your father and mother? Why? I mean, if you were... if you were going to, okay, the commission has selected you to give the world 10 guidelines that's going to make this world a better place.
Sustain it through millennia, any societal.
Exactly. So let's write them down, you know,
right.
And all, one of them would be fish fries on Friday for sure. But, you know, okay, 10 things that's going to make this a better world.
What do you think would be in there?
What would be in there? And would honor your father and mother be in there? But who gave us those? Perfection gave us those. God gave us those.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to go, well, but if I was doing the 10, it'd be this, 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 and this. This is God. Gave us those 10.
Isn't that fascinating? He gave us 10 when there were hundreds before.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I mean, there's a million things like don't cheat at tennis or, you know.
Well, in the culture at the time, how many laws did the Jewish faith have?
Oh, yeah.
And so when man did it, man has to encounter everything.
Yeah.
Right?
And so right there, honor your father and mother. Wow. Honor your father and 5 words.
Right.
5 words, not paragraphs, not 200 pages of this is why. Just honor your father and mother. Boom. I mean, it's powerful. It's really powerful. And if God said it, there's a really good reason.
Right. And it's almost like that's the what would you call it? What's the word? The root from which all the other, how many other laws come from.
Yeah.
Be kind. Treat each other well. You know, be honest. I mean, it goes on and all the attributes, the virtues, how to encounter situations.
Even the word honor. Honor implies all that other stuff. Honor is an honor. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody says, I honor you, or, you know, that it means it's not I'm jealous of you or I'm envious of you or I'm honoring you because that's honorable.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of good traits.
Right. It's a raised.
Yeah.
How would you say?
Yeah. So honor your father and mother, not because they're the king and queen, mm-mm, not because they're the CEO, but just your mother and father could be anything. You know, they could be unemployed and destitute, but they're your mother and father, and you're supposed to honor them.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty powerful that's one of the Big Ten.
Yes,
I know there's
a
football conference called the Big Ten. Well, this is the Catholic conference, and
football
it's the
has
big,
far many, far more
the
rules
Big Ten.
Too.
Yeah,
football couldn't be done in 10 rules, but that's really interesting. The 10 do make it simple enough and clear enough that everything we encounter in a family raising our children, we can go back to the commandments, and it will be a threshold to then scripture, to praying more, to what God would have us do to try to understand what does that mean, truly honor? What are we supposed to do? How do I listen to them? I disagree with them. I think they're absolutely wrong on this. Honor them. You know, I don't like what they did when I was a child. Honor them. And it doesn't mean that you have to take everything, you know, just like gloss over it. No, honoring them means talking to them about it, giving forgiveness where is needed, but also giving patience to understand what was going on.
Well, and you know, ultimately, you honor your parents, they're going to honor you.
Well, it also says in the Bible, so you can have a long life, right?
Yeah, it does.
Live on the land.
That's the main reason I did
it.
Yeah, I wanted that long life. I wanted the reward.
Right. Isn't that interesting that it's tied together with that?
Yeah.
That so you then will have a long life with your own children and family.
Right.
And so the implication is that you will have all of that. So parents right now, they're navigating almost they're walking on a razor's edge that if they don't do something right, they could, especially when you got older kids that are, you know, within the threshold of them leaving the house is within sight. Well, gosh, if I don't agree with you, you're going to stop talking to me. I'm not going to see you at Thanksgiving. And this is only March. So I've got to weigh my words. When honestly, I know the best thing I can do for you is hear what you have to say and expect you to hear what I have to say, because we're both made better for it. One of the best things our parents taught us is to be able to have a debate. My dad used to say, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Because we were taught that you can have a debate and you don't take things personally and you don't name call and so on and so forth. And so we were given that structure. Like, I want to hear what you've got to say. And then there's going to be points that we agree to disagree. But then, wow, I'm made better by the exchange and the understanding. And that's communication and that's human. And, you know, plays forward between neighbors, mm-hmm, between colleagues, teammates, anything. That's the importance of parenthood. And in oh my gosh, there's so much scripture. I would just go into one of the best things the internet does is type in Bible and something you want to know, just subject wise, and God is there.
Jane, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk with you again real soon.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, that God is love and God is just. At the cross you beckon me, you draw me gently to my knees, and I am lost for words, so lost in love. Undeserved life have I been given through Christ crucified. You call me out of death, you call called me into life, and I was under your wrath. Now through the cross I'm reconciled.